on the nightlife. Will Hagen has been one of the stalwarts of the nightlife, and I've got some good news, Will. You're back next year.
Letters in the mail. Good
okay.
stuff.
The
good
Dakar stuff. Rally, fourth year in South America. It's just too dangerous in Africa these days?
Yes, yeah. They had one. Imagine 24 hours before the event where Volkswagen's budget last year was alleged to have been $100 million. Now, let's say it was...
What, for the rally?
Yeah. Now, let's say it was $50 million or $40 or $30 or something. But, you know, the cost of just getting the vehicles through the event in terms of maintaining them, getting fuel to them, tyres and all the rest...
Hang on, how many vehicles are we talking about?
Well, they were running three vehicles, but they were supporting it with journos and all sorts of things and a whole pile of other vehicles. For instance, this year, they're lending 40 Amarok Utes to support the event. Like, Bruce Garland, the Aussie who went in it this year, the beginning of this year, and broke his back... he had to sign a cheque before he got there.
Oh, yes.
Well, send a bank draft for more than $300,000. I remember a guy, an Aussie, 25 or more years ago, was planning to do it on a bike, and the cost of just getting his tyres taken around and having them available for when he needed them was going to be more than $30,000. So imagine the last time they tried to have it in Africa. Imagine with teams doing all their testing, all their vehicle preparation, all the shipping and everything. 24 hours before the start of the event, the organisers saying, sorry, it's too dangerous. It's cancelled. And that's what happened the last time in Africa.
Could we do it in Australia?
No.
It's not big enough? Or what?
Well, it's not big enough and it's not varied enough. Okay. And frankly, I think the authorities would have a funny attitude to things, you know. Mm.
They're a bit more relaxed in South America, are they?
Well, they get stuck into it. And look, it's not so much that you need just a vast, fairly uninhabited area. Mm. You know, we talk of the Atacama Desert, which might surprise a lot of people to discover, is the world's driest desert. It hasn't rained there for about 300 years. And they go across the Atacama. So they start in this year in and going out of Buenos Aires, as they've done in recent times, they reckon, people genuinely say, there is a constant line, many people deep, for 60 kilometres out of the town.
Spectators.
Yeah. And they talk of more than a million people. More than a million.
Okay.
And they're not, you know, these aren't loose numbers, you know. Yeah. Now, when you look at it, Mar del Plata, over to Santa Rosa, San Rafael, San Juan, Fiambula, over to the west coast of Chile, Copiapo, then go right up the coast and end up in Lima in Peru. I mean, talk of an adventure. Okay?
When?
The Andes, the Atacama Desert.
I want to ask this, though. There is a winner at the end, and there's a whole lot of different classes, I suppose. Yeah. But the overall winner. When do they take the lead? Is it like backwards and forwards, or does someone generally head out and never get headed? How does it work?
Oh, well, all sorts of things go wrong. I mean, it's run by the same organisation that runs the Tour de France. Now, if you're a fan of the Tour and how they film that and what we see of rural France, you get an idea of what comes through and this, what sort of an adventure it is. And so the ebb and flow of it in terms of there's bikes, there's quads, there's trucks, Kamaz trucks from Russia, with guys like Shagin and Kabirov and, you know, these wonderful names and everything. And then there's four-wheel drives. And look, mechanical problems, driver problems. When Bruce Garland broke his back this year, he was fiddling around with sand dunes and suddenly there was a drop of about 20 metres, you know, and it just wasn't meant to be there. It caught him out. And
they're not going on roads, as we know.
Oh, no, no. Yeah,
it's a rally. It's a proper rally.
It's absolutely cross-country. Andrew Cowan told me years ago, and he spent a lot of time here doing rally cross and rallying in the Southern Cross Rally and so on. He said it used to take him 3 weeks to recover from the Dakar. And he said he set out one night for the Sahara, and he said there were about 80-odd vehicles in front of them. In the next 24 hours, he saw three, but he was fifth into control. He'd overtaken all these vehicles but never seen them, you know, and they're doing pure navigation. Like, It's an unbelievable event. I just want to get there because I don't believe it, you know. I want to see these guys at scrutineering, the bike riders particularly, you know. It's just a wonderful event, and it'll be covered daily on local television too, and it really is worth watching if you like adventure, heroism, and vehicle testing.
Covered on, you'll get it on pay TV, will you? On
SBS as well.
SBS, okay. Yes. All right.
In fact, it goes to air in two ways. One, you get a delayed coverage, and then later on you get a coverage that's only a few hours old. So it's very current, and I can genuinely say for years I have not missed a day of the Dakar. It's just, it's wonderful. Okay. It really is. And the guys, Stefan Petter Hansel, who's won it about five times on a bike, has won it in four-wheel drives as well. Now, people shake their heads. I mean, the four-wheel drive drivers look at the bike riders and say,
how do you do
it? I don't believe it, you know.
Let's flip to the other side then, which is a 24-hour race for 50cc scooters.
Wonderful, isn't it? Hey, isn't that just lovely?
How do they do it? Firstly, can they do it on one tank of petrol?
Then no.
Okay. They've got to fill up.
Yeah. 1189 kilometres was the distance done this year by the winner.
So is it whoever does the most distance wins the race?
Oh, yes. It's a 600-odd metre track up at Surfers Paradise. They've had it for 6 years.
Right.
They reckon about 20,000 laps were covered by the various vehicles on. And the thing was all a bit astonishing. And I just love it because it's so silly, you know. And 50cc maximum, so the average speed was about 49.6 kilometres an hour.
So there are some that are less than 50cc?
No.
No, you'd have to think 50cc is the lowest.
That's the smallest capacity scooter you can buy for about $2,000, you see.
Do you see them on the roads, 50cc?
Oh, yes, 50s get around. Okay. People say it's a bit small for good use, but it was won by a two-stroke. And two-strokes, not quite so fuel-efficient. They tend to throw a bit of fuel, unburnt fuel, out the rear, out the exhaust pipe. But they give good power, and they're fairly light. And it's a great achievement, really, to thunder around. 14 teams started, 43 riders. Incidentally, Spider Everett, the Aussie rules player, said, "Bring it on, I want to do it again," he said, and I didn't fall off. I don't know where he finished, but if he didn't fall off, he thundered around.
You know, as, what was it, Fangio said, to finish first, you must first finish, you know, I suppose staying on the bike is the key to it all. All right, that's pretty exciting. Also, I don't know whether you talked about this with Tony last time, but there was a new kind of hybrid or electric car rolled out, I think, the other day.
Yes, and Holden's trying to make... I called it a hybrid last time, and Holden says, no, it's not a hybrid, because it runs purely on electricity.
Okay.
It has a petrol engine, but when and if the petrol engine is needed, in other words, when the battery has run low... Mm-hmm. And it needs recharging, the petrol engine starts and creates electricity that continues the driving of the car by the electric motors. And the result of this is a couple of things. One, it's got a top speed of 160 kilometres an hour. This is the Holden Volt, the Chevrolet Volt in the United States. It can do 60-80 kilometres on a battery charge of nearly 200 kilograms of battery down in a T-section down the center spine of the vehicle. The battery's made by General Motors. They created a battery division. They couldn't get what they wanted outside. Mm-hmm. They bought the individual cells from outside, from Korea, but they put the battery together and do all the temperature control of it and the charging and all the programs that, as with Toyota, with Prius, they never fully charge the batteries and they don't let them fully discharge either. They get to about an 80% charge is as high as they want to push them. And they run them down to about 12-13% is as low as they want to drop them. And one interesting thing about this is that Holden says, and they say the battery's warranted for at least 8 years, and at the end of eight, it's still a useful battery and can be used for other things. And it may still be useful for the car. But an interesting thing is, they say it'll have this offer the same full charge in the eighth year as it offered in the first year or in the first month.
Okay. So how long will it last, though? I mean, the car itself. I mean, how long before you either got to change the battery completely or sell the car?
Well, it's at least 8 years, isn't it, because of the warranty. Okay. The petrol engine's interesting. if you don't use it at all, in other words, if you keep your journeys to within 60 to 80 kilometres and then you come back and you plug it into a normal 240-volt power point, which you can do, and charge it in about 4 hours, if you do that and the petrol engine never runs, then every month, to stop the drain of the lubrication with the engine will start itself and run for about 10 minutes and circulate some oil. And at the end of the 12 months,
yes,
if it hasn't been used enough, it'll start up and get stuck into the premium petrol that's in the tank because they don't want it to get old and stale.
Good idea as well. With that, though, you say they want it only to charge up to about 80%. Yeah. Does that automatically stop then at 80%?
It's all computer controlled.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So you could drive it to work, possibly if you are able to drive it to work, plug it in, charge it during the day. Now, okay, I don't want to see my first electricity bill, though, when I've been charging a car up for 4 hours every couple of days.
About $2.50.
$2.50 to charge it.
Yep.
So the question now is, why isn't everyone driving these cars?
Because a couple of things. One, you can't get this yet, and it's about a year away in Australia.
And it's going to cost somewhere between, $50,000 and $60,000?
It'll probably be towards $60,000, I'd think.
So why the hell aren't they... I know they're going to make their money back. Why aren't they developing a $20,000 model?
Well, you've got to get the volume in to get it to 20. It'll come to...
I reckon if they had a $20,000 car that cost $2.50 to charge, I reckon people are going to be running to the shops to buy it.
You've got to take things by steps. Nissan Leaf you're going to be able to buy here, a pure electric car without petrol or other engine charging it. So that... and that'll be available 6 months before the Holden Volt. So in about mid this coming year... that'll be available. But that'll only do 60 to 80 kilometres, a smaller car and a lighter car, purely electric. Mitsubishi i-MiEV. Now, you pay about $60,000 for an i-MiEV, which is a small round-town commuter car. Yeah. It's not a family car that's go touring.
All these cars...
This Volt is.
It is? Okay.
It is. You could have this as a family and you could say, we'll go on a weekend trip in it, we'll use it all the time. Right. Whereas electric cars till now have tended to be seen as... another good vehicle to have as your round town commuter.
Yes.
Now, to go back to your question on $20,000, you've got to have the facility to make them. Now, part of the pricing of Volt, to be truthful, will be we can only get this number of them. If we price those at 40 or 35, A, we'll be losing money, B, we'll be out of stock in the first month. And they don't want to be out of stock, do they? They want to be able to sell... No, don't be unfair. They want to sell them over the period to people who come along and want to buy them. If they lose money on them, they can't go on with development, can they, really, unless they want to subsidise it from other departments. The price will come down.
I hope so.
But it will, like it has done with mobile phones, like it has done with fancy televisions and so on. But they've got to build up the volume, the manufacturing facility, the demand for them, the customer understanding and so on. Look at it another way. Here's optimistic car company. We're going to make this thing. We're going to sell it for $30,000. We'll sell, to pick a number in Australia, 25,000 this year. We make them like fury. How are you going to get the message across to 25,000 people? It takes a while to do it. No, it does.
Yeah, okay.
It's an infusion, gradual building process, but it will happen. And this one genuinely is a nice big step forward.
Okay. Well, it certainly, if it's more than just the 60 to 80, if they're more than just the round town. Before we move on, I want to ask about Saab as well. What about bikes? What about motorbikes or scooters? Are there electric scooters and motorbikes?
Have been for a number of years, electric scooters.
So how much are you paying for one of them? Are they easy to get in Australia?
They're available. Look, I think they've come and gone. Honda had a little, have a look at this and see what you think and tell us what you think at the last scooter motorbike show that was at Darling Harbour in Sydney. But the money on that was going to be fairly high too. And to look at it another way, I've got a 150cc scooter, which I was on earlier today, picking up vehicles and things. And I love it. Now, it gives me better than 80 miles per gallon. So if somebody wants to sell me an electric vehicle with lower performance, higher cost, shorter range.
Sure.
What's the attraction when I fill a tank for $7 anyway?
Fair enough. Will Hagen is our guest. We're talking motor, motor sport. It's motor talk, really, isn't it? TURQUE. Saab is in trouble financially again. Is this the end for Saab? It's had problems in the past.
It is.
It's hard to believe, given that they advertise them, but they make such beautiful cars.
Yes, they do. It's one of those low-volume manufacturers. Look, it's a sad thing, and I've seen it with so many times with so many good brands in good countries. You know, you look at Lancia in Italy, and you think Lancia in its day was a better car than Alfa Romeo, but Alfa's the one that survived. Packard and all sorts of things in America were better cars than Chevrolet, but Chevrolet is the one that survived. You know, it's often the cheaper, pragmatic type vehicle that survives. Saab, if we go back to the early 50s, I can remember Eric Carlson rallying a two-stroke Saab and ending up marrying Stirling Moss's sister, Pat Moss, became Pat Moss Carlson.
Pat Moss. Yeah. Could have been worse. Could have been Pete Moss, I suppose.
And I mean, he did heroic things with this and established a wonderful reputation for that car company, and it had a lot of individuality. We tend to go mainstream, don't we? We don't always like stuff out on the edges
and
lower volume.
Yeah, but Volvo was hugely popular. It was once. I don't know if it is still in Australia. Saab wasn't.
Yeah.
When my mother drove a Saab, she loved it.
A lot of people did, and I loved Saabs too, but the mix wasn't always right. General Motors came in. Look, there was a time when the low-volume European manufacturers all ended up being bought by somebody. Jaguar and Volvo and Saab and Aston Martin and all of these companies. One doesn't mention Morgan. It's been going for 100 years. Has never made its own engine. They make about 600 cars a year. And there's still a waiting list for them, and it's still owned by the Morgan family. But apart from that, these other car companies, all the big companies went mad. They all discovered later, what are we going to do with this now? We've prostituted the brand, like BMC did years ago. You know, pre-war, Riley was a magnificent motor car. By the time BMC got hold of it and commonised it, if you can use that term, along with Wolseley and then Austin Morris and so on,
okay.
They lost their individuality, you know, and I think that's what happened to Saab too. And just because it's got a different badge that once meant something, when it's just a different body and badge on a common platform that's made somewhere else by GM, doesn't have the magic and the allure.
I will say, Will brings in so much to talk about, and we'll try and get to all of it, but I will take some calls in a moment. Will Hagen, our guest, a couple of texts, one that you'll like, Will.
Sir.
Will is correct about electric cars. There you go. Car companies need steady annual production cycles to manage and improve quality over the life of the car model. It is called the Demings cycle, says Jeff. Thank you, Jeff.
Mm.
Craig the Baker says, could you please ask if Will has driven the new Toyota FJ Cruiser?
Oh, yes.
And how can we get people to keep left on the freeway unless I'm
joking? My goodness, man. Well, a good way...
Not only on the freeways, on the streets.
Well, a good way, but would be have policemen on motorbikes, but in cars too, pulling up alongside people saying, over. Yeah. A little bit of educational enforcement would be a tremendous thing. This failure to keep left is unbelievable.
And not only on freeways, though. We're talking about
everywhere.
City streets as well, on the highways of the cities
I'm
as
with
well.
You all the way.
Okay, the FJ Cruiser.
FJ Cruiser. Based on basically a Prado, very well priced, got some shortcomings. I like rear hinged doors, and it has rear hinged rear doors that don't work quite as well as they should.
Yeah.
But it's got a whole pile of character. It's got tremendous off-road capability. We gave it a hell of a sort out in the Flinders Ranges. In fact, I went across the top of a mountain range, and there was the mountain just went down. We're on this ridge. And it just went down there with no fence, no trees, nothing. And I was leaning inwards. The passenger said, are you uncomfortable? And I said, yes, I am. But the thing really worked superbly. I say it's the sort of vehicle Toyota should do. Toyota's desperately, I think, looking for character. And it's done it with MR2, that mid-engine two-seater sports car that, you know, like, if you like, a mini Ferrari and so on, and Celica to a degree. And continually, Toyota buyers are saying, we just want mainstream. We just love Toyotas because they're cheap to run, they're ultra reliable. We know what we're getting. You know, in a sense, they're the McDonald's of cars. But they're trying to build character into their cars. And where's Toyota's great strength? Four-wheel drives.
Okay.
So let them have some fun with a thing like the FJ Cruiser that tries to hark back to some of their early days in four-wheel drives.
The electric car conundrum, perfect for the inner city, but inner city residents don't have garages, they park in the street, says Mark. But that's all very well, but I don't live in the inner city. I would drive it into town or into work or whatever if I could. I'd love a cheap electric car, and someone should make one. And someone else says, how does Saab's bankruptcy...
You're going to have to get older. It'll happen.
How does Saab's bankruptcy affect Scania?
Separate now.
Okay, all right.
Separate. Scania being the truck division.
Yeah.
We should incidentally correct one thing. Right. Last program with Mr. D, we had a caller ring and say, my friend has a Hyundai i30. Mm-hmm. She's had this problem. It's her first car. It's gone to the dealership. They've got to wait some while to get some stuff. It's going to take them a fortnight to fix it. They haven't offered her a loan car. This is dreadful. Yeah. And I've said, sounds very bad. Mm. Give me your details. Hyundai has attempted to follow it up.
Okay.
And they said, we can't find any record. Can you tell us more about this person?
Okay.
I've written to the person's email and I've said, rego number, please, the dealer you bought it from, etc., etc. I've had no answer.
Okay.
All I can say is, at this stage, I have no evidence, nor does Hyundai, which would have liked to have attended the problem, that it appears it may not have been a problem.
Okay, 1-300-800-222 is our phone number, 1-300-800-222. The text number is 0467-922-702, 0467-922-702. Just one other thing before we move on to some calls as well, Will. Last year, 2010, I think it was, crash fatalities in the United States, 32,885. That seems a lot, but of course there's 300 million people there.
With a lot of cars.
That's right, with a hell of a lot of cars. It is the lowest figure since 1949, the lowest in 61 years. 61 years ago, there were fewer cars and fewer roads. And certainly the National Highway Program hadn't begun. So the number of vehicle miles travelled that year were 1/7. So it is 7 times as much driving now
as it
was 61 years ago.
Yep.
And yet the road toll has remained the same. You would have to think safer cars is the number one reason why that is, because I can't imagine the drivers are any better. and the road design and safer cars, that's what saves lives.
Well, it is. I mean, there's all sorts of things. There's communication and medicine and lighting and so on. I mean, you think you have a crash now and you on the mobile phone and the ambulance arrives and, if necessary, a helicopter arrives and all the rest of it. Look, there are three main things. Dr. Laurie Spark, who was for a long time looking after the safety side of Holden's engineering in Australia, he said, if you wiped out the unregistered vehicles with the unlicensed drivers and people not wearing seatbelts and affected by grog, you would wipe out at least 1/3 of the fatals in this country.
Exactly.
In America, they're now getting much better at using safety belts. The cars are obviously better at avoiding accidents, but also better at surviving accidents in terms of the occupants of the vehicles. And
well, in the United States, accidents, or incidents, we might want to call them, caused by drivers with a blood alcohol level in excess of 0.08, so it's in fact more there than it is here with 0.05. That was 1/3 of crash fatalities, mostly single vehicle, so they're killing themselves rather than anyone else. But so if you can in fact cut out drink driving, you can reduce the road toll by a third.
I saw a test done more than 40 years ago. It was done in the early days of Warwick Farm. It was done with ordinary drivers and it was done with race drivers. And please, people, listen to this. Above about 0.02, not 0.05 or 0.08, above about 0.02, all drivers, the very skilled drivers as well as the ordinary drivers, were losing their, losing their margin of skill.
Okay.
If you're driving at 0.05, your driving capability as a total package is less than is desirable.
So if they have the details, as I'm sure they do in Australia at Monash University and that, about accidents caused by those who, you know, if they take their blood alcohol and it's 0.05 or above, you'd have to think more accidents then, or other accidents, are caused by those above 0.02. So there's the, I don't know whether they test them.
Yes, well, that's
so you'd have to think
well
if no
too.
One drank, or if they drank at 0.02 or less, then we're cutting down the road toll by even more.
I find it curious, Rod, that we're not allowed to buy radar detectors in Australia, which would, if they went off, according to the what the government tells us about where they put radar, mm-hmm. would say, this is a black spot
right,
you're
exactly
coming
right,
to.
Yeah.
Be careful. However, you can, at all sorts of places, buy cheap and
that's
not
right.
necessarily accurate testers of blood alcohol
yeah.
level. So that says if you're 0.045 or you're nearly, go for your life. So
you know, you'd think on GPS. I mean, they have a thing on that because I don't have one. But do they have something telling you when a speed camera is coming up? If they did, then you'd slow down, wouldn't you?
Well, people do. You know, I do a lot of travelling these days, well over 1,000 a week, and you know, there are fixed cameras and so on, and you know where the odd Redflex van is. Incidentally, Redflex in America, there's been a lot of the fixed cameras, the red light cameras and so on, have been taken out of a number of states. And guess what's happened when they've taken that? The road toll has become better.
Alaska's a classic
and it's happened
example.
Happened in England too. They've
okay.
taken them out of quite a number of counties and places in England. And as you say, if we could really attend to this drink driving thing, and we do, you know, it's part of the business, but obviously we're not getting to the lot of it, then we could make an enormous dent in the road toll.
All right. Chris has an electric car. Good evening, Chris.
Oh, yes. Good evening, guys. Yeah, you don't need to pay $60,000, $70,000. You join the or go along to one of the AEVA meetings. That's the Australian Electric Vehicle Association meeting.
Right.
And one of the guys there will build you a car if you want. I've got a small Daihatsu.
Hang on, sorry. You're saying they'll build you a new one, or will they
got? No, I mean, the thing is, I mean, if you're going to be sustainable, you don't want to buy a new car anyway.
No, that's right.
You want to buy a second-hand car.
So they'll do something with yours.
A second-hand car was about 10
okay.
years old.
Right.
They'll take the engine out, and they'll put you a...
Okay.
Yeah, and also there are very small Honda generators nowadays that you, the size of a suitcase that you can put in the back, which extends your range.
Yes, that's fair. What sort of batteries do you use, and what's the weight of
well,
the batteries?
Well, actually, I've actually now decided to go with lithium because I initially went with lead acid, and that was a mistake. I was just trying to save a bit of money, but yeah. So,
so
lithium, and I will probably get about 100 to 120 k's on that because it's a very lightweight car.
I drove an electric Charade about 25 years ago, done by Daihatsu in Japan.
Right.
And it was massively weighed down, as you say, with lead acid batteries.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what sort of performance have you got in your vehicle?
It's, as I say, I haven't. It's having the lithiums put in at the moment. So the guy who's doing them reckons he said you should be able to get 100 to 120.
Okay.
I reckon if you get that, you'll be very pleased. Is it down now to a two-seater vehicle?
It's a two-seat vehicle now.
Oh, yeah.
Because
yeah,
I'm
right.
using it for car. I'm using it. It could be four-seat.
All right.
But I'm using it for work, so
okay.
to put the tools in the back. So
thank
I've got the electric carpentry company.
All right. Thanks very much for that, Chris. The Australian Electric Vehicles Association. Stuart is produces electric vehicles.
Hello there.
Yes, Stuart.
Yes, we're about to produce electric vehicles. We have a company in New Zealand who have got it certified, our vehicle certified for New Zealand roads. But you can't register a car here in Australia, an electric vehicle with the use that we have. So ours are e-trikes. Our company is called e-trikes. And they're about 3 meters long, 1.5 meters wide.
So you say they're a trike, are they?
It's a light utility vehicle. So you can have it. You can be a council.
Right.
You can
have this
vehicle picks up stuff in the garden. You can do gardening.
As indeed they've had electric milk delivery trucks and things in England.
Golf buggies.
For years,
and things like that.
Well, ours is not a golf buggy because ours is qualified to go on the road.
Yeah.
Reaches 60 k's an hour very quickly. And you can drive it between the parks and gardens. The golf buggy, you cannot do that because it cannot go on the roads.
Okay, fair enough.
We can also supply vehicles.
We don't want to get too much into an ad,
okay.
Stuart, but I appreciate the fact that you're about to do that in Australia. So thank you very much, Stuart. So there's plenty of Well, value out there, perhaps. But Stephen's got a very important question about them. Hello, Stephen.
Good evening, Rod and Will. Informing and entertaining segment as usual.
It's all Will, I can tell you that. I'm none of the information, I can tell you that.
Now, with the electric motor vehicles, very interesting to hear about the developments there. Just one little caution, and it's probably more than little, that it's very important for those of us pedestrians who don't see or don't see very well, that the thing, even if it's an artificial sound, but that they continue to emit some quite significant sound.
Stephen, well said, and the car companies certainly are very aware of that, I can tell you.
Yeah.
And, for instance, when you start the vault door, it says it's ready to start. It gives you a mechanical motor type sound. But as you say, advising pedestrians of this. Incidentally, Rod, this business of people telling us, oh, you know, you can buy an electric vehicle from us and so on. Anybody referred back to their Walt Disney comics and have a look at Grandma Duck? She drove an electric vehicle.
Really?
And the Powerhouse Museum in Sydney has a 1908 electric vehicle.
The question
is, commercially made and sold here.
Right.
People
so
drove them.
Why the hell haven't they taken off? That's what I want to know. Why didn't the hovercraft ever take off? G'day, Ben.
They took off.
Not very much, though. G'day, Ben.
Good evening, gents.
You want to talk about your favourite car?
Yeah, look, I spend miles and miles on the road, and, you know, 1,000 k's a week for me is nothing. I do 6,000 a week.
5,000 k a week? That's 1,000 a day.
Yeah, I did nearly 200,000 last year.
Where? Is it the same old route?
Yeah, Melbourne, Sydney, Melbourne, Adelaide, Melbourne, Newcastle, always.
Tokyo, sounds
with
like
a, with a big long trailer behind you.
No, I just drive a car with a
really
just drive and take caravans to the dealers. What I rang about,
sir.
I take my hat off to you.
You listen
just
to
hope I don't get stuck behind you.
I don't hold up people.
Thank you.
Many years ago, I bought a very cheap little car. It was a Fiat 125. It cost me $300. And I had the car for 22 years.
Yeah.
And the only thing ever went wrong with it was the gearbox failed at 300,000 miles.
Oh, they do that, don't they? They don't last.
And I swapped it out for $50 and drove it for another 6 years.
Well done.
And I just sort of lament the lack or loss of cheap and cheerful little cars like that.
And light. I mean, I bemoan the size of modern vehicles. I've just taken back the new Ford Ranger Utility, and Rod, the front half of the vehicle, the tray's the same size as utes were 20 years ago.
Yeah.
The front half of the vehicle is monstrous.
Yeah.
We're getting greater safety, mass put into vehicles as we drive slower in traffic, with more onerously enforced lower speed limits.
Yeah.
You know, to me it's... And we're compromising visibility out of vehicles, in other words, primary safety, for crashing safely. A curious priority.
We don't have a lot of time left, so we'll get to all of our callers. But there was a story in The Age yesterday we talked about how people are suggesting you ought to open your car door when you're getting out with your left hand. That way you'll look in the wing mirror and see if there's a bike coming past.
Well, I can see with
whichever
hand I use. I mean, if you're flinging your door open...
Yeah.
And not looking to see if something's coming by, you're being careless.
Exactly.
Whichever hand you're using, might I suggest. I reckon, look, the people sitting around in offices thinking, what will I research this week and report on?
I thought it was an interesting thing because hopefully will make people look in their mirrors.
Rod, what would be the chance of a 1% adaptation of that recommendation? What would be the chance?
Michael, good evening.
Hi, good evening. Thank you for taking my call.
That's our pleasure, Michael.
Look, I just wanted to talk about Toyotas. I've got a love of Toyotas. I've had it for a long time. My favourite car I have was it's an imported car. I don't know if you gentlemen have known it, but you probably do, but a Toyota Aristo, which is an imported car from Japan.
Yep.
And it had the greatest engine I think anybody's ever built, which is the 2JZ. Engine, probably one of the greatest engines, in my opinion.
Give us the capacity and the number of valves and turbocharged or not, just to simplify it for people.
Well, it's a twin turbo. It's a, I think, a 3-4.
Unfortunately, we're losing him, and I'm sorry about that.
But not his Aristo, we hope.
No, some quick answers for you, from you, Will, if we can. Could Will please give his thoughts on the 2005 Audi A4, 95,000K and 15 grand? Goodbye or not? You can't talk about it.
You really can't be certain on a particular model. As they say, when it gets to that sort of age, you're judging not the vehicle and its price, but that particular vehicle. You know, you can't work it just strictly on the model. All I'll say is this, in a general sense, it is a buyer's market. Go around, have a look at what the ads are saying and so on, and see where the price lies. Is it from a dealer? Does it come with a warranty? If it's from a dealer, it will come with a warranty.
Right.
Are you buying privately, etc.?
And Dave has a similar question, but has added an important comment. He's considered buying a 2007 second-hand Mazda 6 diesel wagon, has 160K highway commute, round trip each day. What should I be watching out for or wary of? That's probably a better question.
I don't really know of problems with that. The one thing I'd say is this, that it's a manual transmission, and having just driven the Ford Ranger over nearly 1,300 kilometres with a manual transmission, diesels generally are more comfortable with and easier for the driver with automatics than manuals. So that'd be the only comment I'd make on that. But otherwise, a good vehicle with no faults that I know of.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. But of course, check it out. And
exactly.
Will's advice is of a general nature, and you need to check out this item specifically. Alex says in 2008, James May on Top Gear profiled the hydrogen-powered Honda FCX Clarity, calling it the most important car in 100 years. Are they here in Australia?
No. I've driven a number of hydrogen-powered cars, including 20 years ago, a Benz hydrogen-powered car. I've driven a Benz hydrogen-powered car here in the last year or so. A little bit of a problem with refueling stations.
Yeah.
They can be refueled. I've seen it done.
You'll need to stash it somewhere all over the country.
It's a wonderful fuel and a wonderful little power system where you just have these blocks that convert, get the hydrogen out of water and make it into electricity or convert it to electricity, and away you go. You know, I mean, talk about renewables.
Neil, a little while away yet.
Though.
Okay. Neil says Perth got its first fixed-speed camera on the freeway last week. There was a week's grace on fines. 20,000 people were caught speeding, 2 at 199 and 177, respectively. So, anyway.
You see, the high speeds mentioned are just one end of it. No matter what rule you make, there will be somebody who'll do something
ridiculous
that's way out. But the question I'd raise is this, Rod.
Yes.
If 20,000 people have been caught speeding, is the speed zoning there appropriate?
Good point.
Question. And will the authorities look at that before they go on and say, oh, it's on now, and here come the fines.
That's right. How many accidents
occurred? In good countries, and we tend to try and pull the speed limit down below the 85th percentile. In other words, the speed at which 85% of the traffic normally would just flow along and do. And if you do that, to me, that's where speed limits ought to be. And that's what Europe, England, America work on. But Australia, they say, oh, we can do better than that. We'll pull them a little bit lower.
Electric cars haven't taken off because governments here don't give them any help. A battery that is 1/12 the weight and 70% more power. The government is not interested, but China and US is.
Hang on. Go back to that battery.
Oh, he said a battery that is 1/12 weight.
Well, no, there's 200 kilos of batteries in the Holden vault.
Who we got? We got Bill. G'day, Bill.
Hi there. Oh, good evening. You were talking about the Dakar race. I'm not too, maybe some of the people might be interested that there is actually an entrant from Australia in the race. It's emanating from Cairns.
Right.
There's a Facebook site called Coconut Car Racing Team.
Right.
The team, I think the guy, I only heard it on Talkback Radio myself today. Local member up here was talking about it.
Oh, yeah.
And the bloke's, the driver's name is Jeff Olam. I think he's competed in a couple before this.
Rightio.
He leaves on Christmas Day at 3 p.m. The backup car and a whole container of spares is already over there. So, okay. Now, listeners might like to follow that on his Facebook site and keep an eye on the car.
Well said. We had this year, we had both motorcyclists and car drivers, Bruce Garland and Glenn Hoffman Racing. Both of them are gearing up for 2013 for a year's time when they will, as teams, run vehicles in the Dakar. And in the first day of this year's Dakar, 11 months ago, Jacob Smith for Glenn Hoffman Racing was running 10th until bits that they'd bought from England and Europe started to give trouble on their Hondas. But Cyril Dupre, who has won the Dakar three times and who is one of the favoured guys on a bike this year, went in the recent Australian Safari and was dusted up by the local riders on locally developed Glenn Hoffman Racing Hondas that I suspect when they get to Dakar next year, with a year's preparation and development, could we'll give it a serious shake.
Hello, Trevor.
Hello, good evening, Rod and Will. Season's greetings.
Thank you, mate. Merry Christmas. What's on your mind?
Okay. About 18 months ago, Will gave a glowing report on Holden Captova diesel. I went out and bought a second-hand one with 60,000 kilometres from my partner, which she absolutely loved it.
Okay.
This year it had its 90,000 kilometre service where they changed the timing belt.
Right.
Yes.
Since then, she's been a problem. Noises out from the motor, checked it out, nothing they could find.
Was that done at a dealer?
Yes.
Like a Holden dealer?
Holden dealer, yes.
Yep.
2 weeks ago, I was driving it, it broke a rocker arm.
Oh.
It's done less than 100,000. And the service manager contacted Holden three times. They don't want to know about it.
Okay. Well,
what year model is it?
It's a 2008.
Yeah. I mean, it shouldn't do it, should it? If you'd like to leave...
Okay, well, we'll get your details and
we can follow up with Holden and find out more about it.
All right, Trevor, thanks.
Okay, thank you.
All right, Trevor, we just need Trevor's details, phone number and email address, perhaps. Richard in Wollongong. G'day, Richard.
Evening, gentlemen.
Yes, good evening.
Just a quick one, Will. When you were talking before about electric cars
indeed,
and the manufacturers being aware of of working on the problem of the quietness of them.
Yes.
It's great when you're inside, but also maybe when you're inside, you want to have the feel of a vehicle. The first time I heard this was maybe 10 years ago or longer, and the first thing I thought was, I would love any kind of wacky electric car, as long as it sounded like a Porsche. and I don't know have you heard that the makers of cars that do have the sounds of great sports cars are patenting their sounds so that people
can't do it.
Harley Davidson went to great trouble about this, didn't they?
Yeah.
I wonder if they did it with the illegal exhaust systems and mufflers. But yes, that's an interesting one.
It is indeed. Although, boy, wouldn't it be nice if the streets were quieter? Hoons, what would they do? Kim is our...
Well, we'd get them to turn their radios down as well, wouldn't we?
Wouldn't
Rodney?
We just? Yes, thank you. Hello, Kim.
Hello.
You want to talk about the T-Rex? I presume that's not the dinosaur.
No, well, actually, first of all, I wanted to wish Will a Merry Christmas. How are you, Will?
Thank you, sir. Well?
Kim, we don't have a lot of time left, mate, so mate.
That's okay. I did two things. One is I read today that finally people have admitted that the reason Honda won the World Championship last year was, or this year, I should say, is Casey Stoner and not the bike. Mm-hmm. And, Will, do you know what a T-Rex is? A trike? Have you heard of one?
No, don't know exactly. I know these trikes. In general terms?
I only came across them by accident recently, and they're the most amazing thing. They've got a ZZR 1400 Kawasaki engine in the back of them.
Right.
They're a reverse trike with one wheel at the back, two at the front.
Right.
And they have the most amazing...
A bit like those BRP, the Bombardier Recreational Product. Trying to think of their model type, but they've got them available commercially.
These things are made in Canada and they are available commercially. Okay. You know,
We're talking the same thing.
The question is, can you drive them on the roads here, Kim?
Yes, yes you can.
There's a company called, I think it's Reliant, talking about making a thing called a Strike.
Right.
Which is a very similar thing. You've never heard of that, Will?
No, I haven't, but I've heard of Reliant, an old English car company that made vehicles with fewer than four wheels.
Yes, I know. Yeah, okay.
Three, well, apparently. All right, Kim, have you got a point you want to make or a question you want to ask?
No, I just wondered if Will had heard them, and okay, I just want to say thank you to Will for what he's done for us all year, and Merry Christmas.
It's a pleasure. Thank you, and we should congratulate Casey for the way that he's ridden the wheels off his Honda all year. It's been absolutely wonderful.
He is a champion, and, of course, you know, Australia's biggest sporting earners are generally getting about on wheels, two or four, Mark Webber, Casey Stoner, or Cadell Evans. Just a couple of more texts here. Astrid, and thank you very much, Astrid, for your very nice Christmas card. The Subaru Sherpa.
Yes.
What do you make of that?
It's a little old van, isn't it? Tell me, clarify.
I don't know, but it's just the Subaru Sherpa, question mark, from Astrid. I think she's just wondering what you think
it's
about
it.
It's
not a current model.
Okay, all right.
I'm deficient, obviously, here. I think it's an older, small, commercial-type vehicle model. But I'm sorry, I can't provide more than that.
Okay, all right, no worries. With the 1/12th of the weight, this battery has no high-density metal organic cell storage. Current life is short. Apparently.
Excellent.
But anyway.
Well, ring Chevrolet and advise them that you can help them out of their problem.
All right. and Stephen from Croydon points out, quite rightly, if 20,000 drivers are caught speeding, it's because Australians have no respect for the road rules. So, you know. If you know what the... No, but seriously.
Yeah,
whether you agree with
it or not.
You're
being careless. No, that's true.
If you know what the speed limit is, you cannot complain if you're going
faster. I agree, and I subscribe exactly to that, because, as I say, the last thing I can... The thing I must avoid is losing my license.
Exactly.
The speed limits ought to be appropriate too, because then the whole thing becomes everybody's happy and with respect for the law.
The last question of the year. Mike says, what's the costliest car regularly made? I know Jeremy Clarkson had a car on his show worth $5 million, but it was a one-off. What's the most expensive car you can buy?
Either a Maybach or a which comes out of Mercedes-Benz or Rolls-Royce of sort of regular production cars. I mean, Bugatti, I suppose a Veyron's be more expensive than can't run it in Australia because it's only left-hand drive.
But, Maybach, how are they going? They've gone again, have they?
Shockingly. No, I mean, nothing's happened to them.
Oh,
but
okay.
Benz thought, hey... There was this prestigious pre-war brand, Wilhelm Maybach. We'll revive this. And you could count them on two hands, the number they've sold.
I'm just going to say, before we go to the weather, if we've got that tonight, we know your passion is cars. Your work is cars. You love your cars, but your passion is sailing as well. Yeah. You've got the Sydney Hobart as well.
Oh, yes. Yeah, look, just a wonderful adventure. I've been following the Hobart since the 50s.
Well, it only began in 1945.
45. My stepfather, my father was involved in offshore racing in my, you know, before I was born. And I've discovered some old, very much box brownie type photos of Sydney Harbour with some Hobart contenders in 1954.
Wow.
I've come back from Hobart on a boat. But
you've never
I don't want to go down sitting on the rail and occasionally winding on a winch and rushing back to the rail. If I get on a boat, I'd like to do things like trim, perhaps steer and so on. I came back, I navigated, I steered, I trimmed and did all sorts of things. And we had the most wonderful sail. It was just glorious. I've done offshore races north. I've been in the city to Mooloolaba and sailed on up to Hamilton Island. But here's an interesting one. In a very old boat, it was celebrating its 50 years. It was a little canoe, stern double-ender thing, a little timber boat. And we were offshore and the bloke had been on watch through the night, said, oh, this wave came over the stern. And he said, it was like a spa here. We got to Coffs Harbour, and they said, do you hear about the earthquake in Newcastle?
Oh, no. Unbelievable.
Yeah. We had the tsunami over the stern.
Unbelievable. Just a couple of minutes. Looks like no one at the Weather Bureau tonight. Your car of the year. Will, you got a thought?
Whew. Benz with their twin-turbo diesel C-Class for about 65, 68 grand. It's quite a lot of money. But for the Benz that it is and the size of car that it is an outstanding car. The little Volkswagen Polo GTI at 30 is a stunning little motor car, 7-speed DSG box. One of the things I like that Holden's doing with their Cruze, that Volksy's doing with several of their models, is coming down in engine size, yet getting more power, more torque, better fuel economy. And this little thing is a 1.4-litre engine, gives tremendous economy, can be really sporty, it's about 30 grand. And no wonder, Rod, that they had at one stage a 6 months waiting list for it.
I think they should have made more of them.
I've just picked up an i40 Hyundai, and I tell you, wow.
Okay. We should also note that it's tragic when a motor driver or a rider is killed, but when they die, recently happened.
Marco Simoncelli, yeah.
Yeah, but also...
Jason Richards?
Yeah, doesn't die on the track. You know,
no,
that's...
I mean, 35 years old and killed with cancer. And really, one of the lovely blokes who was a real racer. In other words, he'd wring the neck of a car, try and get something extra out of it. Really, genuinely, very sad. Something very else. Sad. And I feel so sorry for his wife and of his course. Two young daughters.
I hope you have a very, very happy Christmas.
Thank
and
you,
a wonderful
sir.
New Year, and we'll see you back here on the night.
The same to you and to all the listeners. Happy, safe, law-compliant motoring.
A very good point. Police are out in force. I believe all police leave has been cancelled.